And welcome back in Hour 3, broadcasting live from Jack Daniel's Barrel House inside of Bridgestone Arena. Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Nick Kale, Braden Gall, D-Mace, Chase, the whole crew with you for another 2 hours. 615-737-1025 is the number. Let's get back into some football discussion. Derek Mason, I want to get your thoughts on this yesterday. I know we're getting closer and closer and closer to the mock drafts. And the NFL draft coming up, they're being released by everybody now, the Mel Kuypers of the world, the Todd McShays, Mayock, you name it. Yesterday, Mel Kiper, Ronald Jones III out of USC, the running back. I know we've been talking about the draft the last couple of days, pass rusher versus offensive line. When we talk about big picture, and I want to get your thoughts on Ronald Jones and a running back, but what is it? What is more imperative, to surround Marcus Mariota with talent or to get an elite pass rusher to get after the Deshaun Watsons and the Andrew Lucks?
Well, this was a problem that, you know, not too long ago that the Tennessee Titans ran into. When I mean not too long ago, I mean in 98, 99, when you had, you know, Peyton Manning, you had Mark Brunell in Jacksonville, and you had some other quarterbacks that were, obviously Peyton's probably the greatest. Mark Brunell was on, he was at the pinnacle of his career at the time. So what we had to do, you had Marvin Harrison, you had Jimmy Smith, you had Keen McCurdle, you had these wide receivers that can just, you know, torch you at any minute. So what the Tennessee Titans went and did and said, you know what, we're a running team. We're not going to deviate from that. No matter what you say, no matter how many wide receivers the other team go get behind me, no matter how many points they put up, we are not going to deviate from who we are, and that's a running smash mouth team. But what we are going to do is beef up by defense
to get
to the quarterback. We're going to draft Javon Kurtz that runs a 4-4. They can get to Peyton Manning. They can get to Mark Brunell. They can get to these other quarterbacks very quickly. Don't give them the time to pass the ball. They won't score. And it worked out perfectly for us. You add Javon Kurtz. You bring in Kevin Carter the next year. You add in some other pieces. John Thornton a few years ago. A few years after that, you add some pieces within that big Henry Ford, within that defensive line. Now they're getting to the quarterback. Keith Bullock, I think it was 99-2000 draft. Now they're getting to the quarterback. Now we don't have to worry about scoring as many points because you're not scoring as many points. I think that's what the Tennessee Titans need to get back to. How do we stop the quarterbacks in our division? How do we stop the teams from scoring in our division first? Well, we need to go get a – we can't sit here and say we can go tit for tat for scoring, because I don't think we can do that because of the makeup of our team. But what we can do is go get some pass rushers that can get to the quarterback to stop them from scoring. So to me, and Brayden has brought this up plenty of times, go get somebody that can get to the quarterback. I want a pass rusher. I don't want a wide receiver. I don't want a running back. Honestly, I really don't want a corner. I want some guys that can get to the passer. What do you think Jacksonville did? They've been doing for the last 5 years. They've been stocking up on defensive players. And it all paid off in the end. They had the number one defense. They went to the AFC Championship game. They should have won that game. Why? Wasn't because of their offense. It was because they led the NFL in sacks and they got to the quarterback. That's the way the Tennessee Titans should go, I feel.
I completely agree. D-Mace, I would love to, like, say, no, I totally disagree with you on this or that or the other thing. But, I mean, Ronald Jones is a really nice piece. That was Mel Kiper's latest mock draft. Had Ronald Jones running back out of USC. He's a very dynamic player, 1,500 yards rushing last year, 1,000 yards the year before that, 1,000 yards the year before that. He's a really nice piece. He's a nice player, sort of like Lamar Jackson, really nice player. It's just, to me, you can find really nice value at that position later on in the draft, and this defense is still a couple of steps away. They won some games against, you know, Jacoby Brissett and Joe Flacco and Blaine Gabbert, and they won a couple of games with defense because they were playing garbage quarterbacks. They played against Garoppolo, and their defense was torched. Logan Ryan, Adoree Jackson, Kevin Byard, they upgraded the talent in the secondary last year. The next step is to build depth along the defensive line, get pressure on the quarterback, maybe draft another middle linebacker somewhere along the way, maybe replace Jonathan Cyprian in some capacity with maybe a younger player that can learn behind him for a year as a safety maybe later in the draft. I'm with D-Mace on this all the way. Give me a pass rusher in the first round because that is where you draft. I looked at last year's second round just during a commercial break. Last year's second round, total, all 32 players totaled 10 sacks last year. Total. You don't find pass rushers in the second and third and fourth round. You find them in the first round.
The reason I brought this question up about the offense versus the defense when it comes to adding talent in the draft is because, D-Mace, I know you had said a couple of times in the last few weeks that the offense lacks speed.
And Ronald,
Ronald Jones has some speed and some home run ability. So you look at a guy who, like Matt LaFleur, who's coming in, he's going to get his chance to be the offensive coordinator and call the plays, get out of the shadow of Matt Ryan and Jared Goff and Sean McVay. And he doesn't have a ton of speed on offense, but yet the head coach is defensive-oriented, a former coordinator for the Texans on the defensive side of the ball. So you're going to have this, okay, two big guys, two big names, one with a defensive pedigree, one with an offensive pedigree. Now, granted, Vrabel's the head coach, and he'll probably win out, as would John Robinson, but I'm just trying to figure out where's that delicate balance between, yeah, you need pass rushers, but you got to get this quarterback some guys that can make plays.
Well, if you can't get a Saquon Barkley, if you can't get a Geis, if you can't get a Chubb or Sony Michel, guys that prove in college that they were game changers, game breakers, then I wouldn't even waste my time in the first round with a running back. I would wait to the second or third round. If you can't get one of these high-powered wide receivers, Chris Ridley, Kirk out of Texas A&M, then
I think you could get Kirk in the third round.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
If you can't get a
guy that will take the top off of a defense, I don't want another
possession
Corey Davis. Yeah. I don't want another Rashad Matthews. I don't want another Decker. I want someone that has legit. I want someone that I saw run at the combine and run a legit 4.3. And then when I turn on tape, that 4.3 shows up on tape.
Well, Christian Kirk is that guy.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's what I want. And he got in the main ingredient. He has to have dog in him. You know, I don't want to – just like the kid from Washington last year. I said when the draft came out, don't touch that guy. He doesn't – the game I saw him play against Alabama, which to me, Alabama is like the litmus test to what you're going to see in the NFL.
Talking about John Ross?
Yeah, Ross. Because they got NFL guys just everywhere. He played against Alabama, and you know what he did? He laid down. He did not do anything. He pretended to be hurt. Don't draft that guy.
Christian Kirk, to me, is the guy that I don't even need to see the 40 time at the combine. I know that dude is fast. I've watched too many games of him. I just don't think that – and we played this audio from Todd McShay last week on the show. Mm-hmm. There are no great receivers in this class outside of maybe Calvin Ridley. And even Calvin Ridley feels like a little bit of a stretch for a top 15 or 20 pick. I think he's a nice player. I don't know if he's a top 15 or 20 pick. I like Sony Michel. I think Ronald Jones is on par with those guys. I think he's just as good. Nick Chubb's got some injury history, but he's not necessarily that dynamic pass-catching guy. He's more of a between-the-tackles guy. To me, it's Saquon Barkley or nothing else. I love Darius Geis. I think Geis may be in that same category. But if you can get one of those two guys, then maybe I'm willing to consider it.
But if you can't get him.
But if you can't get one of those two guys, which probably is – we're talking – I've seen Barkley go as high as 2-3, 1-2-3. I've seen Geis go in the mid-teens. It doesn't feel like either one of those two guys is going to be available for you. I don't want to settle for – and don't get me wrong. Again, I like Ronald Jones and Sony Michel and Nick Chubb. I think those guys are all about the same. To me, that you can get a guy who's – the drop-off from that to John
Kelly –
They get
Kelly, a Royce Freeman in yeah, the third like, round somewhere.
Exactly. The drop-off from those guys to John Kelly or Rashad Penny in the fifth or fourth or third round, like the drop-off of talent isn't that great. The drop-off from Saquon Barkley and Darius Geis is pretty big. Those two guys, to me, are sort of a cut above, and maybe it's worth looking at those two guys, but you'd have to probably trade up to get them, and then you're talking about giving up more commodities. So I don't want a receiver or a running back early in this draft, and I'm not sure I really want any of the receivers in this draft. There's a few guys.
Well, like they're going to have to draft one.
Like, I like Christian Kirk a lot. That's a really nice fit for what this – he's sort of a Taywan Taylor type of player, really dynamic, explosive. But I don't want to see him earlier than the third or fourth round. I mean, that's the cost is the key here.
615-737-1025. Let's say good morning to Ellie in Nashville, who's up next on the game. What's up, Ellie?
Yeah, I think the Titans should not make the same mistake Matt Millen did. You know, get a wide receiver 1 year, then if it didn't work out as well, get another wide receiver. I mean, John Robinson already made a mistake by drafting Corey Davis fifth. We need a pass rusher. We need to solidify that defense. Maybe go for Sammy Watkins or someone like that in a free agency. Maybe get a guard in free agency. I think our offense has the talent, And the reason why Mike Mulocki was fired is because he was not able to develop this talent. Let's develop that talent. Let's get more people on defense. Let's get a tough defense. Let's win a Super Bowl.
You know, it's an interesting point. I'm not a big fan of Sammy Watkins, but he did play for Matt LaFleur and the Rams and Sean McVay, so there is that familiary of the offense.
I don't know if he's going to get hurt or not. I don't trust it.
Frankly, what's he going to cost you? He's coming off one of his better seasons.
He's going to cost you at least $12 million a year.
No chance I'm paying for Sammy Watkins.
No, I would agree.
The other thing I disagree with Ellie on the call is to call Corey Davis a bust. It's too early. It's way too early to say that. D-Mace has made very good points about how I need to see more speed out of him. I need to see the development. I need to see the dog.
I don't think he's a bust. I just need to see more.
Right. Like, it's just way too early. You can't take a guy who was hurt most of his rookie season and make a definitive statement about it one way or the other. I think he's got a ton of ability and is going to be a pretty good player and is going to develop into a pretty nice weapon for Marcus Mariota. He's never going to be Julio Jones, but he may develop into a really nice weapon. That's the direction I lean on this, and that's just sort of – that's just my opinion on that. That's just sort of where I fall on it.
And quickly, the other I disagree with the caller. I don't think Mike Mularkey got fired because Marcus Mariota didn't develop. Because the previous year, Marcus Mariota had his best season as a pro. Last year, he dipped. I don't think that had anything to do with Mike Mularkey. We all know, and let's not sugarcoat it, we all know why Mike Mularkey got fired. Mike wouldn't fire anyone else, so he got fired instead. So let's not throw this out that Mike Mularkey got fired because, you know, Marcus, he didn't develop Marcus. Well, he had nothing to do with Marcus. He hired the guys that he thought would develop him, and 1 year it worked, 1 year didn't. So let's start with this. He didn't develop Marcus Mariota because that wasn't his fault.
All right, when we come back, we will go inside the NFL draft pitch that the city of Nashville is using to get the draft here next year or in 2020, and we will also update you on the stupid poll question of the day. Welcome back in the Morning Drive on this Thursday, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are inside of Jack Daniel's Barrel House, Bridgestone Arena. Nick Cale, Braden Gall, D-Mace, and Chase, 615-737-1025. We'll get an update on the stupid poll question of the day, get D-Mace's take on that in just a couple of minutes from Chase. All right, but the NFL draft, let's go inside this sales pitch, guys, because we were talking about this last week when it was announced that Nashville would be one of the five finalists for a city venue for 2019 or 2020, but it looks like all along the city has been planning for this before it was even an option that it would leave New York.
Yeah, Nashville's been early on this for a while. We've talked about it on 102.5 here in the morning for the better part of over a year now that this is an option that Nashville needs to go after this. And I think it's an absolute no-brainer. The downtown campus seems to be the focus of this. It seems like you're going to get the Symphony Hall involved, Music City Center, the Ryman, Country Music Hall of Fame, Ascend Amphitheater. You can get all of these different pieces involved. You got the parks outside at the Hall of Fame Park, and then the Riverfront Park is a great place to put a venue for music as well. It seems like music is going to be a big part of this process. It's such an easy, nice, smart fit, and it's a sellable roadshow commodity, circus sort of party for the NFL. It's a no-brainer to me. And I love that the NFL wants the NFL draft to take on the charm and the character and the vibe and the DNA of the city that it's being hosted by, whether that's Chicago, Philly, Dallas, and now maybe Nashville and Vegas, let's say, for example. I can't think of a negative. Now, if you happen to live downtown for those 3 days, it's going to be a mess, but guess what? That's what happens for CMA Fest. That's what happens for all the big events. New Year's Eve turns into that downtown. I mean, everything kind of turns into that. So it's a great idea to bring a ton of money and revenue and fans and a cool event that, you know, you're only going to get probably once every 25 years. It's going to come here. Mm-hmm. It's a really exciting thing for the city and just another bullet point and feather in the cap for the city of Nashville as far as sports goes.
Well, the pitch has to be for 2019. I think in the NFL's mind, 2020 is perfect for Vegas.
Yeah, it's Raiders all the way.
It's Raiders all the way. You know, their inaugural season there in Vegas. What better way to bring in the Las Vegas Raiders than to have the draft, that off season prior to their season. So their pitch has to strongly be for 2019. I'm with you, Braden. I mean, it's to me, the pros are it's easy. I don't know how easy it will be because you have the influx of people coming in and out, kind of like CMA Fest. Getting to the airport is kind of hard once all these people come in. But realistically, logistically, Nashville is an easy place to get in and out of. It's easy to get around. If you're centralized here in downtown, you can Uber, cab, whatever. It's not going to take you long to get to places. So wherever they're going to have their venue set up, it's going to be a little bit easy to get from one point to the next. And I just think the infrastructure is here. Nashville is a city that people want to visit. I'm pretty sure that, you know, if you were to name Nashville the place for the 2019 NFL draft, people will put that on their calendar to come to Nashville. Maybe they're not even big draft people, but they want to go to Nashville, and that gives them a reason to go to Nashville, the NFL draft, just to be a part of what's going on. So that would be, and along with a bunch of other stuff that you know, people on the council will throw at the NFL. You know, what do they have to fight against? Well, I said it last time, Kansas City and the Hunt family. I don't think Denver is much of, I think what you get in Denver, you can get two times over in Nashville, other than the mountains. You know, I think the only real competition here is Kansas City because of their history, because of the Hunt family.
Now, does this factor in at all? Now, granted, the NFL draft is about what you do at the next level and how you project, but when we talk about college football markets, short of Atlanta, Nashville is about as big as it gets. Does that play into the decision-making process, considering we are right here in the hub of SEC country?
I think that's an interesting question because I don't know how much it plays into the NFL's mindset, because the audience you're selling this to is like that beer-guzzling diehard Eagles fan or that Bears fan or that crazy Lions fan who's showing up with like violating all of my
Jet fan.
Yeah, violating all of my man code rules where you're wearing like 13 items of Detroit Lion gear and you're that big old dude from Detroit. He's just like, yeah, NFL draft. Yeah. You're Calvin Johnson. I don't know if you're just a big diehard Georgia fan.
How much does it play?
I don't know. It's an interesting thing. I think for us Nashvillians, we like a good party. So if you put music down there, you put some concerts going on, you bring the kids on a day in the afternoon, on a Friday afternoon, it's a nice day, the weather's good, and you're going to take your kids to an outdoor concert venue and, oh, by the way, watch a show here, go eat dinner there, and maybe see a couple of draft picks on Friday evening. Mm-hmm. I could see that being a draw for people. But I think you're catering and marketing to the NFL fan, which continually every day amazes me that there's less overlap than I think people realize between the college fan, the diehard college football fan, and the diehard NFL fan. Like, I think I'm one of the – I feel like I'm in the minority that I love both of them so much.
Yeah, not many people love both.
Yeah, like if you're a diehard – especially in the North, you're a diehard pro sports, pro football fan. Like, if you're in Chicago, you love the Bears as much as people in Alabama love Alabama. Mm-hmm. Like, that's, you know, that's the, like with the Wisconsin Badgers, my home state, the Wisconsin Badgers have 86,000 fans at their stadium. Beautiful stadium, gorgeous campus. But it is clearly the number two priority in that state. The Green Bay Packers will always be the top priority in that state.
I'm just giving you like one example here. Charles Davis, former Tennessee Vol, NFL Network, NFL.com. His mock draft, he's got 10 guys out of 32 in the mock first round coming from the SEC. So maybe I'm being too much of an SEC homer and a nerd, but when a third of your draft is coming from one conference and one of the cities is an SEC hub, you put the two together, I think it makes somewhat sense.
I think it's an added bonus, if nothing else. I mean, okay. I think this is maybe it adds 5% attendance or something, and it boosts it up a little bit. But I find it interesting. Like, I don't like I didn't. I wasn't watching Derek Barnett get drafted by. Like, if I'm a diehard Tennessee fan, do I know that they people in this city became Colts fans because of Peyton Manning? But Peyton Manning is a rare thing. Like, that's a rare thing. I think Alabama fans who want to see Derrick Henry, maybe they start paying more attention to the Titans because they've got Derrick Henry. But I've never really followed. Like, I'm a Packers fan, if Derek Barnett goes to the Eagles, I'm like, good on you, man. Way to go, dude. But that's not a reason I would go to a drive, you know, 2.5, 3, 4 hours from Auburn or Athens or Tuscaloosa or Oxford or whatever to come see my favorite player get picked by some team I don't care about. Like that to me, that doesn't register with me, but maybe I'm in the minority.
I think the NFL draft, when you talk about putting in certain cities, I think your one of your determining factors can't be, well, you know, where do we set up based upon college region? You can't do that because, you know, Braden says up north, I mean, we like college football, but they love their pro sports. Down south, it's we like our pro sports, but we love our college teams. It's kind of like in some cities, let's just say Texas, for instance, where high school football reigns supreme. Like, it's not where you went to college. It's what high school did you go to? That's kind of how the thing is up north and down south is I don't care about what pro team you play for. What college you went to down south? Oh, Alabama, great, we love you. Up north, not about what college, what pro team you play for. What pro team do you root for?
Yeah.
Oh, the Bears, great, you're on my side. So it doesn't really matter, I think, in regards to, okay, we have it down south. And
it's a bonus, you know, though.
It's a bonus, it's not like a determining factor. So because you're going to have a lot of people, I think majority of the people, if you have it in Nashville, will come from up north to watch the NFL draft.
If you're making
northeast.
If you're making a list of why Nashville is a good destination, the fact that it's a heavy college market with a lot of SEC fans that have players that are going to the draft, it's probably 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th on the list. The top ones are, you know, hotels, infrastructure, how fun is the downtown area, can you get there, can you travel there, how easy is the airport? I mean, all these other things are bigger factors. I think Nashville and the music are the biggest draws. And the fact that the downtown campus is just fun. It's just a fun thing to be a part of when there's a bunch of people pouring into it.
All right, Josh, back in the studio. Let's get an update on our stupid poll question of the day.
Now, the stupid poll question of the day.
It is a very simple process. You just go to Twitter. You go to our account at 1025_MD. You hit the follow, and you vote. We do this every day. Now, this one, I don't know if it's stupid. I think it's kind of a question of ethics.
It's a moral question.
It's a moral question. And so I want to get D-Mace's thoughts. What do you do when you are given extra change after buying something? Meaning they overchange you. Do you keep it or do you return it? 51% say return it.
Lack of morals.
I'm a heathen.
The people that don't think you should return it, just a lack of morals.
Let me read some tweets before we get your answer.
I'm a heathen. I kept the $2.
So, let's see. At Smashville Meme says, if I catch it, I'd return it. Most of the time, I don't even count the change. Yeah. Probably why my wife doesn't like when I carry cash. Bob says, ridicule the millennial for not being able to count.
That's my favorite.
Craig says, now this is a good one. I went to a UT game this fall. I was there for the visiting team. I handed the guy working a $50 for the $20 parking. He gave me back two 20s and a 10. I didn't want the bad car.
Now, he deserved that. Yeah, you deserve. I'm taking the money. I'm keeping it.
Also, it's parking in a stadium, which is a rip-off in the first place.
Yeah, I'm keeping it.
I didn't want the bad karma on game day, so I gave him the 20 back. If it didn't help, though, my team lost. Hashtag go Sycamores.
Oh, my goodness.
When
it comes to parking, I'd have kept that money. Yeah. I'd have given me my money.
No. My favorite part of that whole story is that he thought the $20 karma was going to help beat Tennessee. I don't know. It's just sort of like if it's a multi-billion-dollar corporation, I don't care about the $2. I'm going to steal it from him. If it's parking. Parking at sporting events is one of the biggest rip-offs entire country. It's an epidemic. And if somebody's going to – if you're going to accidentally get 10 bucks off your parking because some guy can't count.
Because that's what it's supposed to be.
Whatever. Take the money.
Goodness gracious. Yeah.
It's not stealing.
It's
kind of stealing.
It's happened to me before at a, you know, at a restaurant or something where I've given the cashier, the individual, you know, X amount of X said dollar, and they gave me too much back. And I've given them, you know, back what they overly gave me. Because what you don't understand is that if it happens more than once or twice, then more times than not, they're going to get fired. or that money.
They're going to get in trouble for sure.
That money's going to get taken out of their check. So I don't want the money. And I know it might only be $2 or $3, but to a teenager, that's a lot of money. To a family that's working hard, paycheck to paycheck, that's a lot of money. So I'm going to give the money back. I'm not going to worry about it. Now, if they give me extra food, I'm taking extra food.
Also, that's if it's a tip situation, I would leave the extra money back as a tip.
Exactly.
I would, if it's a tip situation. Now, if it's a drive-through situation, that's where it's, I don't know. Like, I don't ever look at it, so I don't ever notice. The other thing is I've been – you've been on the other end of the spectrum, too, where you are given back the wrong amount of change, and they shortchange you on accident, and it's an accident, and you don't realize until you drive off. I think there's like a couple of dollars here, give and take on both sides, that like it balances out over 20 years. Like,
exactly.
615-737-1025. You can vote on the poll at 1025_MD. Stick to sports coming up in 15 minutes. Stay there. Welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Great to have you on this Thursday. We've got Stick to Sports coming up in just about 10 minutes, so look forward to that. And then coming up at 9 o'clock, we go in the locker room with D-Mace. You can send your questions on Twitter at 1025_MD. But last night, college basketball, I don't know about you guys, I was like literally on college hoops overload last night. It was a perfect night for a night off from hockey. Just hoops. I mean, I went from Duke Carolina to Bama Auburn, Syracuse Carolina, Alabama Auburn, Duke Louisville, Tennessee Florida. It was like about a 4-hour stretch of some really, really good basketball last night.
Yeah, and it's just, it seems like, Middle obviously has got a big weekend coming up next week with Western Kentucky and Marshall at home. It's a time of year where you just things start to formulate and crystallize a little bit more. You're starting to see seeding a little bit more accurately projected. Auburn with that win and Tennessee with that win sort of cementing themselves as the 1 and 2 seeds in the SEC tournament going into that tournament, which is going to be an awesome tournament, it looks like. And obviously every one of those teams in the SEC with big games coming up this weekend, because now you've got Texas A&M's lost this week, Arkansas's lost this week, Alabama's lost this week, Missouri's lost this week. All four of those teams vying for – the difference between a 6 seed and a 10 seed is maybe a couple of losses at the end of the year, but the difference between a 6 seed in the tournament and a 10 seed or a 9 seed in the tournament is a huge deal, because if you can get ahead of a 7 seed, you've got a much better draw. I'd much rather be playing 6-11 3 pods and 5-4 pods than be that 8-9-7 matchup where you know you're going to face a 1 or a 2 seed in the second round. That's how important these games are, and every one of these games is a quadrant 1 or 2 game right now in the SEC.
My two biggest takeaways from last night, one is that North Carolina, I feel like, really has a chance to not only win the ACC tournament but get back to the Final Four. I know Duke and Virginia are very good, and they have more star power, and they've got more on their resume this year, but Carolina looks like they're coming together at the right time, and I watched that Joel Berry kid, and that kid's just a winner. And then the second thing I really took away from last night was Auburn beating Alabama the way they did with only 7 scholarship players. They've already lost McLemore to injury. They were out without their top scorer last night. And I know there's some things hanging over their program with the NCAA investigation and Bruce Pearl, but they just look like a juggernaut right now. They play so fast at such a warp speed tempo. And it just feels like maybe they're a team of destiny.
And they're not. My question is, what does that mean? Like, if they were to win the SEC tournament and win an SEC regular season and conference tournament championship, that would be an astounding year for Auburn basketball.
Of course.
I don't think you can apply a team of destiny to the NCAA tournament. For them to make that type of run, Final Four type of run, like South Carolina did last year, they need that go-to number one guy like Sindarius Thornwell was for South Carolina last year. He is that elite level in crunch time score, a guy that was just dominant in the NCAA tournament. You need that guy. I'm not sure who that could be for Auburn. And frankly, they're just not a big team. They bust their tails to rebound. They work
play hard.
I love how they play, and that's a Bruce Pearl thing. But when they get matched up with a team with some size in the tournament, what does it look like? Experience, what does it look like? There's just I guess I wouldn't be shocked by anything with this NCAA tournament. It's just so wide open. I think I'm hopeful. Every year we say some of these things, I think it's going to be a great tournament, or I think the playoffs in the NFL are going to be great this year. Every year we have these vibes, and sometimes it doesn't work out. I hope that the it's a wide-open tournament thing, Nick, that you've been on for a long time. I hope that that's true, and I feel like it is, but I'm still – I hope that it's true.
I just feel like when you look at this outside, if you're going to go away from the one seeds and get away from the chalk, if you're going to say no to Sparty, no to Virginia, no to Duke, or whoever it might be, Purdue, I just feel like if there's a team or two teams that can make the Final Four and get to San Antonio that are not ones, it feels like North Carolina, and I don't know where exactly Auburn's going to fall.
Probably right in the same range as North Carolina. Probably right. I mean, 2, 3, 4 seed.
I like North Carolina. I've always liked North Carolina, no matter what. They've had a down year maybe once or twice under Roy Williams. And when I mean down, it's not been 20-win seasons. This year, they have Luke May, who could be a Wooden Award winner. Barry, who, you know, was excellent in the tournament last year. So they have players. They're one of those teams that has size, that has a big man that can shoot inside, that can shoot outside, a double-double guy in May. Then they have Barry controlling from the point. He's a guy that can shoot from outside, create his shot. So they could be one of those, you know, 4 or 5 seeds, 2, 3 seeds that can potentially – you know, make a – and it would – to them, I don't consider it a run, but they can be – when you look outside of Duke, Michigan State, Xavier, Villanova, that could be the team that can upset any one of those four teams.
Cincinnati, I think you throw in that group. The problem is chalk. There is not really chalk this year when it comes how great a team – like 09 North Carolina, we looked at it. There was a Tyler Hansbrough team, and we said – this is the best team in college basketball. They should win the national title. Mm-hmm. Kentucky's undefeated year, Anthony Davis's year, where, like, this is the best team in college basketball. They should win the national title. Even Duke the same year Kentucky was undefeated, and I know Wisconsin knocked them off in the Final Four, but Duke had Jahlil Okafor and was just – they looked like one of the best – like, there are teams that certainly just look like the best team in America sometimes, and we don't really have that this year, which I think is what makes it really interesting. I still think the champion is going to come from that group, that Purdue, Virginia – Michigan State, Duke. I think Arizona is the team no one's talking about. That's a team that I would really keep an eye on. I think Arizona is going to be really dangerous. They've got a baller in the middle in the Ayton kid. He is going to be a lottery pick, top 5 pick, and is going to be a stud in the NBA. I love his game. We're talking about a 6'11 guy who can step out and shoot a little bit, and he's got that just physically imposing body as well. I think Arizona is one of my sneaky teams that I really like. But Arizona's still a blue blood powerhouse program, right? Yeah. I mean, that's still a – they're there every year. I mean, you know, like, it's the same guys. I think the champion still comes from the state. I don't think there's room for a Wichita State or an Auburn to Clemson, Texas Tech. I don't think there's room for those teams to sneak in and win the title. Maybe make a run to the Final Four, but I don't think they can win the title.
615-737-1025. When we come back, we stick to sports on Morning Drive. Welcome back into Morning Drive on this Thursday on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Nick Braden, D. Mason Chase. We are broadcasting live Jack Daniels Barrel House inside of the Bridgestone Arena. We'll go inside the locker room with D. Mace coming up in about 15 minutes. But right now, we do it every day at 8:45. We stick to sports.
Let's see how smart the guys really are. No funny business. Stick to sports. Now on Morning Drive.
That is right. Every day, 8:45, I have 5 questions for these very intelligent individuals. They don't know what they are. They're all surprises. They're a mix of fun and serious topics. But we will lead things off with the NFL. Mark Sessler from NFL.com did an article on all 32 teams and their number one free agent signing. Now, he kind of made this a little bit of a fantasy thing that – you know, money's not really an object. Just these are the guys that I think would be the perfect fit for each team. For the Tennessee Titans, he says one that actually might make some sense. Running back Jerick McKinnon, previously of the Minnesota Vikings. So, D-Mace, I'll start with you. Would McKinnon be a fit for the Titans, especially if DeMarco Murray is no more?
I think he would be. And his price tag, I think we discussed it the other day, is in between that, you know, high 3, mid 4 per year, meaning million per year. DeMarco is scheduled to make, I think, around 5 or 6, somewhere around there. So it would be, from a money standpoint, it would be a good addition if you don't keep DeMarco Murray. But that he's younger, he's a dynamic type of player. He's a guy that can change your offense for the better if you do indeed bring him in.
I like McKinnon, but if you're going to go free agency, I would rather grab Josh Sitton from the Bears, who was released as a free agent guard, and draft a running back as opposed to pay McKinnon $4 million. But I'm not opposed to McKinnon. I like him. I think he's got a good skill set, and he would offset Derrick Henry pretty nicely.
Yeah, I kind of agree with everything Nick had to say there. I think I'd rather pay that money to a guard, maybe more proven commodity, draft a running back, pay him a lot less, and develop him. But I like McKinnon. It's actually the same thing. I like McKinnon's skill set. It's a nice fit. And what really is interesting is the more and more you read about these things, these little blurbs that are all over the web, almost every one of them says, with signs pointing to the Titans not bringing DeMarco Murray back. I mean, every single one of these things starts with that.
Yeah.
And that seems to be an overwhelmingly agreed upon thing that DeMarco Murray's not coming back.
Yeah.
That's sort of a new thing out there on the interwebs.
Number two.
So we are in franchise tag season, as we have touched on this week. The Miami Dolphins made it official yesterday, putting the tag on wide receiver Jarvis Landry.
This is a guy
that I think we had batted around. But what do you think is going to happen there, and did they make the right move? Because he can sign the tender, they can sign him to a long-term deal, or they can trade him. All of those on the table right now. Nick, I'll start with you.
So the question is, did they make the right move with Landry?
Do you like how they've handled this?
I don't know that I necessarily like the way they've handled it, but that being said, he's a weird individual as far as the way he plays the game, because he's a slot receiver, but he's not fast. He's physical, he's strong, but he catches 100 balls a year. So, I mean, you know, if you're locking him up short-term and you're maybe overpaying just a little bit, you know, I think he could do worse, but he's a pretty good player.
400 catches in his first four seasons. 400 catches in his first four seasons. I think there's like three dudes that are better than that. So dude's caught a lot of passes. I don't know if he's worth franchise tag money, but he's a good player.
It goes to the old college theory. Just because you catch a lot of passes don't mean you're a good receiver. The guy is averaging 10 yards per catch. He's barely averaging a first down per catch in 4 years, okay? He's had over 5 touchdowns one time last season, okay? Yeah, he's played all the games. He's been targeted at a high rate but doesn't catch a high rate of passes. I would pass on this guy.
Well, he's not
11,
a
big... 11. He had two 1,100-yard seasons. Last year was 900. His first year was 700. He's just a guy that can be put in an offense that throw the ball a lot of times, that can catch passes. He's not a dynamic player.
Well, he's not a breakaway player, and he doesn't have burner speed, and he's not a red zone threat, but neither was Wes Welker. Wes Welker was a 100-catch guy per year in the slot.
And that's why New England chose not to sign him back.
Well,
that's why they never gave him big money.
Well, because they had Julian Edelman, too. They'll just replace Welker with Edelman.
Stick to sports. Number three.
So with spring training starting for Major League Baseball, at this time every year,
we see the clubs
play against college teams. Now we've seen this for years, that a college team will go to camp, they'll play a couple of games against a major league team, and so on and so forth. So my question for you guys is, could you ever see this taking place in like an NFL training camp, that you bring in a college, you know, Alabama goes and they have scrimmages and they practice with the Titans or the Jags or whoever the case may be? Could you ever see that type of cross promotion, or however you want to word it?
Well, if they're in shorts and
yeah, people would die.
It's one of those scale things where it's, you know, the second practice of an NFL practice where everybody's in shorts. It's just a basic glorified walkthrough. Yes, I can see that happening, but when you put on pads, never.
Somebody would die.
Yes,
never. I mean, I love the baseball thing, but baseball is not a physical, like adult grown man sport where like I'm knocking bodies. Even I don't think this works in the NBA. I don't think this works in the NHL. I don't think this works, especially not in the football world. I just think it's too. It sounds really fun on paper, but I don't know if you can execute it correctly without somebody getting hurt.
Yeah, there's no chance. I mean, I saw a couple of years ago when Cleveland was god-awful and Alabama was really good. It was like Cleveland would be a 17-point favorite over Alabama if they would play. So if you're going to put them in a practice-type setting, no, it would be just atrocious.
And I'd lay the points, too. Cleveland minus 17.
I would, too.
Number four.
So yesterday we went curling as a group. That was our first family outing. And, you know, for Braden and for Derek, I thought it was a success. Nick and myself, not so much.
My goodness.
So my question is, what's our next event? What is something else that we should do as a morning drive crew?
I'm going to throw out penalty kicks in soccer.
Okay.
I want penalty kicks in soccer. I want all of us to take shots on each other.
Can we actually put Porth between the pipes down here at Bridgestone and all take shots
just
at him?
Fire pucks down him?
Yes.
Fire pucks
down him? I would like that.
Yeah, anything with penalty shots in hockey or soccer, either of those two things.
Okay.
If I can line up and drill penalty shots for soccer at Porth's head, that'd be great. Or either one of you two guys. Or vice versa. You know?
Well, I think to give everybody a legit chance other than probably Chase, I think we should go visit Coach Davis again, Kermit Davis again, and down at MTSU and shoot some hoop, man. I think, you know, it's a three-point contest. I think that gives
Willie Donick's not invited.
Yeah, Willie's not invited. Chase, you can –
Look,
I've seen your
I will
shot.
Do.
I've
I will
seen
do
your
anything.
Shot, Chase.
I know. I will do anything, but I tell you up front, it won't be good.
Yeah, it won't.
Okay.
Be good.
No. That video was spectacular. It was not just good. It was amazing.
We have to do NFL draft combine stuff.
Absolutely, because you know I have actually run the 40 before. Yeah.
We got to do the 40.
Run the 40 last year?
Jared Stillman did not run the 40, but I ran the 40.
He was scared. That was just such a cop out.
Why was he so scared?
That was such a cop out.
We got to do the bench press too.
My speed.
Yep.
Number five.
All right.
I want to know how many reps D-Mace you could throw up on 225. Right. Whew, now.
Probably not many. I can get at least 10.
So
I could probably do 4, maybe.
Jay-Z, this was a story from a couple days ago. Jay-Z went out with his friends to celebrate a birthday. They hit three different establishments in New York City and spent over $110,000, including the final stop, the Playroom nightclub. They spent $91,135.
What?
Including,
what did Beyonce have to say about all this? That's what I want to know.
On drinks. Yeah. They were buying Jay-Z's own brand, Ace of Spades Rosé, $1,200 a bottle.
Wait, so he's making all the money back?
Yeah, basically.
Because he's just giving himself his own money?
The tip was over $11,000 at this establishment.
That seems cheap, actually.
So
percentage-wise, yes.
Yeah, that's like 10%. Come on, Jay-Z.
I'm very interested in Derek's answer, but I'll start with you, Braden. What's the most you've ever spent at a bar?
Oh, God. A couple $100, maybe? Like, I don't know. Like, I'll spend more on dinner than I will at a bar, for sure.
What was the total damage you said? 110?
Over 110,000. With the tip, it was like 113.
I think the most I've ever spent is $110.
Yeah.
At a bar?
Derek?
Just a bar?
At a bar? I don't drink.
What was
like
your rookie
that.
What was your rookie meal that you had to buy for everybody?
Rookie meals, and I think two guys, Joey Kent and I, split it. That year, because he was the second round pick and I was the fourth, and we were the only two offensive players, I believe, that year. Might have been one more player.
What was the
but
damage?
I think the damage was, it wasn't that much back then.
With inflation.
Yeah. It was around, I would say, 4,000, somewhere around there.
Yeah, I mean, you think about inflation. Those tabs these days are like 15, 16,
exactly.
18 grand.
So it was around 3,000, 4,000. I think he and I split it. Something weird happened. I think he ended up paying for one night, and I ended up paying for another night.
I would say, like, I think the most expensive meal or bar or any kind of tab I've ever had is probably under $500.
Scott Sanderson was another offensive player.
Oh, yeah, Scott Sanderson, yeah.
Good fact checking there, Chase.
But I try not to spend a lot of money. The most I've ever, like, by myself or if I was with a buddy at a bar, I probably picked up a tab and it was probably, you know, $150, $200. That's it.
Yeah, Catbird Seed is the only place I've ever spent, and that's, you know, $200 a person basically to go eat. So my wife and I gave that to each other as a Christmas gift. And that was probably maybe after tip and drink pairings, probably like $450. And that was a one-time and a once-in-a-lifetime thing.
I just can't
and I'll
justify
never do it
drinking
again,
that so. Much liquor. I just can't justify.
Agree.
And buying shots at $100 a pop. No.
So you were not with Lindale and Vince up at the up at Morton's Steakhouse?
Because 5 minutes later, I'm going to the bathroom, and it's all coming out.
And on that note, we will wrap up Stick to Sports. When we come back, we go inside the locker room with D-Mace right here on Morning Drive.